And we're back.
Welcome to No Direction Beyond, your Starfinder news, reviews, and interviews podcast. I'm Alexander Agunis, No Direction's everyman gamer, and I'm joined, as always, by the most intrepid Starfinder this side of the galaxy, James.
I'm James. I used to write Code Switch.
Hallelujah. We finally made it, James. We're out of the desert of content drought, and here we are suckling on the sweet nectar of the new Starfinder.
That was a lot of intimate metaphors. I'm glad we have new stuff to read about the game.
Oh my gosh. Listen, so like James and I plan all of the episodes that we do, and we're like sitting here like rationing out, if we talk about this on February and this on March, we can just survive long enough to get to April so we don't have to sit there and go, but we're here. It's finally time. I've never been so glad to do our show at the end of the month as I was when they were like, yeah, the tech class play test is coming out on April 21st. And I was like, yes, our show is after this.
Yeah, it is weird. They tend to release stuff on the first or second weeks of months.
Yeah, or like, do you remember, gosh, they did one of the things where literally like we did our show and then like it was back in December where we like gave our final thoughts on the playtest, and then like we went live on Wednesday, and then on Friday they were like, before the end of the year, here's all this new data that Alex and James would have loved to go over during the episode. We were like, oh no.
Sometimes you miss something, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah, so we actually have a lot to talk about today. We have the tech class playtest. Like all recent Paizo playtests, we don't really know anything about what book this will go to, but we assume that it will have tech classes because this is called the tech class playtest. And I don't know about you, James, but I feel like the community was like really clamoring for these two. What do you think?
Yeah, I think the mechanic was one of the most popular classes in first edition Starfinder. Technomancer less so, but the people that really like Technomancer really like Technomancer.
You know what? The people who really did, really dude. I know. I agree. And I think that seeing them omitted, especially since these are two core classes, and a lot of people were like, you replaced them with the Witch Warper. That's not a core class. And I'm like, you know what? But like, if they need time to cook with like making this interface with gear a bit more, I'm kind of okay with that. Like, yeah. I do like me some Technomancer. I'm a fond Technomancer enjoyer personally, but I'm happy to let things cook.
Yeah, I mean, the mechanic, I think, was the one that was more glaring to be missing because there was no analog at all.
Yeah, and it's interesting because, like, it meant that the core rulebook didn't have any type of, like, pet class quotes. I'm doing, like, the quote fingers with my fingers if you're watching us live on Twitch TV. But, I'm happy to see everything back here. But let's go in and give a look at all of the deliciousness. James, of these two classes, which one do you think vibes the most with you?
With me? Oh, the mechanic, obviously.
Okay. Do you want to start talking about the statistics for the mechanic then?
Sure. The mechanic itself, key attribute intelligence, because you got to be smart to not hurt yourself, I guess. A lot of hit points, A plus con mod, expert in perception, expert in fortitude and reflex, trained in will, because you can't stop yourself from making robots. Good at computers,
true.
Simple weapons, martial weapons, unarmed attacks. Light armor, medium armor, class DC. So pretty much what you'd expect from a mechanic.
Yeah, I agree. Now, there's a lot of cool stuff in the mechanic class. The big things that you get, you know, I think that it's safe to say that we could skip like all the basic like stat upgrades. We'll talk about some of them that are special and cool, but we're not going to go into depth about every little thing in this class. We've got an hour to talk about two chonky classes, and then we have stuff at the end too, so We're gonna move at a good pace. Now, the big thing that the mechanic gets is you have a custom rig, you have an exocortex, and you can modify gear, right? Those are the big three. Now, what would you say when you think about the mechanic? What is the thing that you remember about first edition, James?
The exocortex slash droid.
Yeah. So in Starfinder 2nd Edition, the exocortex, instead of being like a separate option from the drone, is kind of like the computer system that lets any type of weird mechanic thing that you do function, right? Mm-hmm. It's a sophisticated program of self-modified code synchronized with your brain that you can use to remotely control complex devices that you've designed, right? So you get one of these devices, and I think they're all pretty cool, would you say?
Yeah, it gives you the tools to do maker stuff or hacker stuff or whatever you'd want as a mechanic.
Right. Now, if you were a mechanic fan in first edition, there's nothing like the original Exocortex where, like, you press the button on the side of your head and all of the lines zoom in and, like, target your person. There's no VAT system on the mechanic in this edition.
Yeah, yeah. They changed it to either the deployable explosives, a little friend, or a little friend that shoots.
Yeah. You've got lots of ways to deploy friends. You've got the drone. You've got mines and you've got the turret. Now, James, I feel like now when we played Overwatch, I remember you really liked Torbjorn. So I feel like the turret is really your jam. Am I wrong?
I mean, you like Torbjorn because it's a meme, right? He has a hammer. It's funny. He's small man.
Hammer up!
Yeah, as far as characters, not a huge fan of mine. I was looking more at the mines because that reminds me of a character that I played in Pathfinder that I really enjoyed. And there's an ability that I think is very late to get. I wish they had an earlier version, a later version, but that allows you to do things like heal with your mines later on.
I am fascinated to hear you talk about mines. So would you mind sharing your thoughts and maybe tell us a bit about what that Exocortex does?
Boo.
So, I'm cringe. Slay me. You can't.
So your mines get deployed. You can choose to either put them next to you or throw them. They take actions. They actually don't get destroyed from damage in the area, so you're pretty safe by that. You can also choose when they trigger, unless you don't want that to happen. It's a later option as well. You get a number of them, 2+ int mod, and you also get to prepare more after a certain amount of time, so you're never out. They're kind of a self-sustaining resource there.
So what's really interesting about this from like a design perspective is that it seems pretty clear that this is trying to emulate a focus point system for the mechanic, but not a focus point system, because focus points in second edition are like, I get 1 point and for every spell that I have. And then when I spend 10 minutes refocusing, I regain some of those points, right? This is very similar. You get 2 up to your intelligence modifier in mines. And then every 10 minutes that you are in exploration mode, you regain 2 mines. You don't have to take an action. You just do it. And it doesn't stop you from taking other exploration activities. The first time I read this option, I was like, why would I ever take a mine? Or when I have a drone that can punch all day, or I have a turret that can turret all day. And I missed that sentence where it was like, oh, I just recharge the bar while I'm walking. Like, oh, the mines, I just keep making them. Like, yeah, I'm not paying attention to anything is going on. I'm making the mine.
Yeah, yeah. Then similarly with the turret, you get a new turret every day. If your turret's destroyed, you can just create a new one. It feels very much more like an adaptation of a video game cooldown system than a role-playing game resource system.
Yes. Now, one thing I think is very funny is that you can actually take cover behind your turret because it's big enough for you to take cover behind the goal, which is fun. What's also fun about the turret does not require ammo.
Thank God.
Yeah, and it also counts as a martial ranged weapon. And it has upgrade slots. It's a little bit weird. Those upgrade slots are located on your custom rig. We haven't talked about it, but your custom rig is kind of like a personal toolkit that you carry around with you. You get to pick a type of toolkit that it is for free, and then you could spend money to buy more toolkits to install into your rig. So in this case, for the turret, you put all the upgrades into your custom rig, and they count as being in your turret, and you have to interact and touch your turret in order to you do things and install them. But they're in your rig. It's a little confusing, but I get what they're going for with it.
Yeah, yeah. I think even if it is just worded a little bit funny, the spirit is good.
I kind of think that, so if later on in the section, the robot companions are like a thing in this. We kind of skipped over the drone. We'll talk about that in a minute. But if you're familiar with second edition Pathfinder, robot companions are things. They have little stat block write-ups similar to how animal companions do in Pathfinder second edition. And it kind of is weird that all of the information is just in a paragraph instead of being presented as a little stat block. I think maybe they should give me a little stat block, but I don't think it's make or break the class personally.
Yeah, I think they did that because the options for it are massive and it's a whole page onto itself.
Yeah, for you mean for the robot companion?
Yeah, for the drone and the associated parts of it, yeah.
I mean, I'm kind of expecting that when the book goes live, that robot companions are going to be in their own section. There's kind of like a sidebar that makes it seem like this is a summary and it's going to be its own thing. So It's this class feels like the playtest is giving us like two or three different sections worth of content in one class. I think this is probably why they didn't put this one in the core rulebook. This feels like it needs a lot of different parts from different areas of a book to make it work.
Yeah. Yeah. I do like that. Also your drone like robot buddy repairs itself at the beginning of every day, avoiding the problem that you had in Starfinder 1E where your drone was kind of out of luck some days.
Yeah. Like I said, if you're familiar with the Animal Companion in second edition, you kind of know what this drone looks like baseline. They use different terms. Like they don't use like young and nimble and savage. Like there's new terms for different things that are very drone appropriate, but it is the same, dare I say, chassis. I think I said that wrong.
Yeah, chassis.
Yeah, thank you. We all know that I can't pronounce things worth anything. You remember last week ago where you blew my mind with what the word potpourri meant?
Yeah.
because I thought you were telling me we were doing a potpourri episode.
No clue with that. Still confused. I'm confused.
That's fine. Psychic damage is real.
Before we jump to the rest of the section there, we did jump over the modify ability that they have.
Yeah.
The modify ability allows them to alter certain types of things to get different benefits like armor, weapons, grenades, their own exocortex. They're fun little abilities. You get a couple of them and you can apply them and they last, I believe, until they're not on there anymore.
It says until you modify again or if the item is destroyed or leaves your possession.
Okay, the item remains modded until the start of your next turn. Okay.
Yeah.
So it comes out, and I believe there's stuff later on that allow you to keep those mods on longer.
Yeah. For those of you who play first edition Starfinder, modify is miracle worker, but not useless. It's amazing. I love it. If you ever played first edition mechanic, miracle worker was like once per day that goes up to three times per day ability that gave you a +1 enhancement bonus to like a roll or an armor class. And like, that's not bad, but this is way cooler. This is much better. This makes me feel like I'm actually modifying my gear. It doesn't make me feel like I am a player just scrounging for every little numeric bonus I can. This is much cooler.
And Dead Phoenix made a good point with having your upgrades on your custom rig. When your turret dies, you don't lose the upgrades on it. So that makes sense.
Yeah, that's true. You can literally drop your turret into a black hole and you still have the upgrades.
Yeah,
good job.
Yeah, sure.
I imagine that since Dustin is on the design team and is Starfinder's first designer since Owen Casey Stevens, that he was very aware of the possibility of falling into a black hole because he fell into a black hole in my Starfinder home game.
Ah.
He got better, though.
He just got better.
So let's talk about some other cool stuff the mechanic gets. If you are familiar with how Pathfinder 2nd Edition does pseudo-skill classes, the mechanic is a pseudo-skill class. And what I mean by that is that they get bonus skill increases that are unique to the mechanic. They get them at, it's called Mechanics Ingenuity. They get one at 3rd level, 7th level, and 15th level. So basically every time your proficiency would go up. You get a free increase to crafting or computers, and you get a bonus skill feat at those levels that must be crafting or computers. So typically, like if you're playing a rogue or an envoy, like a very skill focused class in this system, you get a skill feat at every level. And if you're not as skilled, you get them every even level plus a bonus one sprinkled in on one or more odd levels. The swashbuckler is like this in second edition Pathfinder. And in this game, the mechanic gets a couple bonus ones for the skills it cares about, which I think is pretty cool.
Yeah, and then you get some mobility options at 3rd, allowing your turrets and mines to move, or you and your drone to move together.
Yeah.
Extra mods at 5th. Kind of neat things that almost seem like they could have been extra, class features that you get, but they, like, at the, what do you call those? I want to call them mechanic tricks, but that's not right.
They're just called feats.
Yeah, they're called mechanic feats. They look like they're feats, but they were probably like, well, these are good enough that we just give them as a class feature just to break up the in-between levels.
Now, there are a couple of critiques I have about the mechanic, and I actually in general, I like this class. I think this is a improvement conceptually and thematically over the first edition Starfinder mechanic. To me, I look at this class and I'm like, oh, there's lots of cool fiddly bits. And this class has a clear identity, which is something I was very critical of the mechanic for literally forever. You can listen to our first episodes of No Direction Beyond. And I complained about the mechanic's identity, about how it was a skill class that whose primary class features were combat abilities. Essentially, this class balances that much better. Now, here's my question. You said you really liked mines, James, right?
Yeah.
Now, are mines considered weapons like grenades? Because, like, I was reading that ability, and there's nothing that says, because, like, in turret, the turret clearly says this is a martial ranged weapon. I didn't see anything that said that like, this is a grenade or whatever, or this is a mine. Like, that a mine is a type of weapon. And the reason I ask is that at fifth level, one of the options you get for the modify ability is being able to do energy versatility or physical versatility, which is where you can target a grenade or a weapon that deals damage with modify, and you can change what type of energy damage it does if you pick energy versatility, or you can change which type of physical damage it does if you pick physical versatility. If you are a turret mechanic, you could do modify on your turret and change its damage type, which is very helpful because the turret has like a whole bunch of different like weapon types that it can be. It's got a chain gun if it shoots like bullets. It's got a disintegrator gun if it shoots a disintegrator beam. It's got a laser version, a shock weapon version, a sonic version, and a cryo version. And you could actually swap between them using this damage customization ability because it's a ranged weapon. But I couldn't figure out if the mine counts as a weapon, because if it's not, that means I can't use this ability to make like cryo cold mines or like shock EMP mines, and I really feel like you probably should be able to do that.
So I don't believe it counts as that. Some mines I believe get some upgrades and changes, but your base mine has the ability to choose between piercing and fire.
Gotcha. Yeah, so that would be the one thing that I feel like mines need to be better integrated into this kit. If they counted as a type of grenade, I think that would be great. Like, you can modify a mine as if it were a grenade. And like, yeah, it means you're going to have to future proof a little bit, but I think it's worth it. That would be, but like, aside from that, I feel like this is a pretty solid class. I like it.
Yeah. I think they want your mines to be secondary, so you use that ability on your primary firearm, because the mines have feats like double detonation, where you just blow up two mines on somebody.
That is pretty funny. I don't know. I think that if this is my major class feature that I'm choosing, like instead of having a robot or a deployable turret, I would like it to interface with my class. But that's just my opinion. I like, if we're talking about feats, some of the things that I think are really interesting is that there's a lot of mechanic options for like medicine and healing, which I wasn't expecting. And I like that.
Yeah, like the healing mines at 11th.
Yeah, or high-tech medic at first, too, which says you can basically put three items with a healing trait in your custom rig, and you can basically use, like, the fact that you have healing items in your custom rig to, like, remove conditions, or if you have a drone, you could command the drone to deliver whatever medication you've put into your custom rig to someone. I'm going to inject you now with medicine! You're feeling better! That's very good.
Yeah, I love it. That was good, except the 12th level version of that ability, I don't really understand. I might be missing something where you can choose to grant the target fast healing equal to your intelligence modifier or item level until the beginning of your next turn.
Is that healing mines, or is that something else?
Which no, one
is
that? That's when you were talking about, concentrated dosage.
Oh, let me see. I didn't see that one.
Yeah, once you get past the first parts where it's conditions, the 12th level is you give something fast healing for one round.
Oh, okay.
Why would you ever do that?
Because you're giving it one hit point, I guess, for one round.
But that's a 12th level advancement.
That's a good point. I don't know. That doesn't seem very good.
I get, like, is it just because, like, you get a little bit of healing suddenly because you didn't choose the healing option? But, like, it's a lot of words to say, yeah, here's an advancement feature that isn't funny or isn't, like,
impressive. Yeah. I think that. So, I mean, it says you disassemble the item to deliver a powerful dose of
analgesics.
Yeah, thank you. You knew I wasn't going to say that right. Analgesics. If a targeted creature has the clumsy or sickened condition. So I guess that means the creature that's targeted by the item. Yep. That's a little bit confusing because that's a modify effect. So, like, I would assume that it's talking about the creature targeted by modify. but it's not. It's talking about the creature targeted by the item. I think that you're right. I think this needs rewording.
Well, I don't think it's a modify action. I think it's just a feat you have.
Well,
oh, you gain the following.
Yeah, those two are mods. Like, they are options you pick with the modify ability.
Yeah.
So I think it's saying that, like, when you target the creature with the medicine, it increases the dose.
Yeah.
And so I guess I don't think that additional, I mean, unless I'm reading it wrong, because it talks about disassembling the item. Like, my, in terms of flavor, I would assume that that means that the item no longer does its normal thing and like its normal effect, but it also doesn't say that. I think concentrated dosage is not worded well. I think this wants to add these effects to the medicinal, which is arguably a little bit better, but I think that one round of flat fast healing as a 12th level ability, where it's either, and it's level 12, so it's equal to your intelligence or the item's level. Like, I guess if you're disassembling a level 1 potion to do like +4 healing each time, like, that's fine. I don't know, it seems pretty bad to me.
It just seems weird to even throw that on there. Like, you could have just capped it at that 6th level advancement and then just not have written more.
I think that whole ability needs to probably be rewritten because it's not clear on what it's trying to do. Like, I don't understand whether this item, like, whether these reflects replace the medicinal's effect or if they're additional to it. Because, like I said, it's that word, it's that flavor word, disassemble. And that's the thing. That first sentence is a flavor sentence, but that puts into question whether or not it's trying to tell me that this item no longer does what it's supposed to do, which is not true of any other mod. But you take the medicine apart. Like, if I take my insulin apart, like, I'm not going to get the effects of the insulin. I'm going to get whatever I did to my insulin. So I agree with you. That's not written very well. That needs to be fixed.
There's also other ones that I think are written fine, like instant deployment, where when you roll initiative, you get to throw out your minor turret, hunker down, where you get to run, take cover, and you can either detonate a mine or make a shot or make a strike with your drone. Like, there's low level stuff and I think higher level stuff that are fun and written less confusingly.
I think that there are a couple of names too. Like, if I'm being pedantic, which I have no right to be pedantic because I can barely pronounce the word pedantic, but when I see the second level feat modify drone, that makes me think I can't use the modify action on my drone unless I have this feat, and that's false. Like, picking a drone gives you modify abilities for it. And then you read it, it's like, you can apply mods to your drone as if it were a weapon, applying those to its weapons. That makes sense. I feel like the name should probably be changed, or at least say you can mod your drone's weapons as if you were wielding them, right? I think that's the other thing that that ability is missing. It specifically says that mods only work while you are holding them. And this ability does not clarify that they do not just end for your drone because you're not holding them. Unless your goal was for me to piggyback on my drone and like massage their weapon so that the modify effect doesn't go off. I'll do that if you want me to, but I don't want to.
I think the modify effect goes through your custom rig.
Yeah, it does, but maybe I'm wrong. Okay, so I think I am going to reread this, but this is going to bring me to another critique about this class in general, and more the Technomancer than this one. Mm-hmm. So it says that using your modify says you are holding or wearing your custom rig. Okay, using your trusty custom rig, you quickly customize a pair of gear, interact to draw, retrieve, or swap an item, then add one of the mods listed below to that item. So how do I draw, retrieve, or swap my drone? the item remains modded until the start of your next turn, but the effect only ends if you use modify again or if the item is destroyed or leaves your possession. So if my drone rolls away from me, does that weapon mod I do on my drone no longer work?
No, I mean, probably. It's still in your possession up to 150 feet.
Yeah, so now it says you can modify your drone, and if you go down to drone, it says you can modify your drone and any weapons it wields when you are within reach. Right.
Yeah.
The drone counts as,
is ambiguous.
Yeah. Yeah. This whole thing about how it targets the drone needs to be clarified. And if it needs to be clarified for the drone, it needs to be clarified for the turret too, because one of the turret's literal mods is that you could deploy it somewhere else. You could specifically put it in a place where it's not touching you, which doesn't work with the modify ability.
Yeah.
Like this class is super cool, But if there's one critique I have about the mechanic, and the Technomancer 2 when we get to it, is that there are a lot of complicated moving parts and a lot of proper nouns to this class. And sometimes it feels like these abilities were designed at different iterations and stages, and they do not work harmoniously together. Yeah. I think that this is going to be a difficult class to play test because there's, you're going to have to do a lot of house ruling. And when you guys submit your feedback, which you should do by the date Paizo said on their site, you should definitely make sure to clarify, like, hey, a lot of these abilities just don't seem to work as written. And I'm going to have to guess because this says I need to touch my thing, but I also use the mod to deploy my drone far away. How does this work?
Yeah, all right. There is one that I did want to run by you. At 12th level, there's spinning blades, drone exocortex. It gains the spin to win action, which is hilarious.
I love it. Very good.
The drone deals a melee strike damage to all creatures within a 20-foot emanation. Basic reflex save. Did emanations change from first edition to second edition?
No, they start at the effect that the space of the effect that like has them, and then they go outward from there. Usually I think they pick a point as like one of the corners of like the entity's square. So like if you're a human and you have like one square with four corners, you pick a corner that it goes out of. I'm pretty sure.
Okay. Cause pretty sure. Emanation in Pathfinder is a bit weird, in first edition because it goes through and around things.
Yeah. I think it's weird that spin to win. So I guess it doesn't have the aura ability because it happens instantly, the aura trait.
Yeah, it seems like a burst. It seems like a burst, yeah. But the word emanation makes me think of first edition emanation, which is like, if there is a way for it to get around one corner, it goes around that corner.
Yeah, I think they chain, so I think you're thinking of spread.
Spread
went around corners in first edition. Okay. I don't think they use spread in 2E. Okay. If they do, I haven't seen it.
Okay, and emanation is burst that radiates out from first edition. Okay.
It's specifically a burst that goes out of a target, where like a regular burst comes out of a point.
Yeah.
I imagine in the core rulebook they explain all of that specifically, but this is a good example of how this game kind of does require a lot of technical literacy, and I think that hurts the mechanic. You need to know a lot of terms, and there's a lot of parts that just don't seem to mesh with each other well. It feels like a lot of it is just because this class is afraid of letting the mechanic buff other people's stuff. Like, yeah. The mechanic, they don't want the mechanic to be able to miracle worker their friend's abilities.
I mean, to be fair, I mean, it's part of what the idea is the mechanic does that for themselves. And I think there's some stuff that allows them to do stuff to other people's belongings. But the other people should have enough things to do. And you as a mechanic should have enough things to do on your own that your job isn't your support, right?
Yeah. Well, one of the other things, too, though, that I would say is that if Pathfinder 2 and Starfinder 2 don't really do a lot of buff abilities, like... I think heroism is one of like three buff spells in the game. It's like heroism, bless, and there's another one that's very well known in first edition. Yes, haste. Those are like the three or four big ones. And like in first edition, you'd have tons of little things that you could roll effects on yourself, and they don't really exist in this game. I kind of wish that this was a class that was allowed to be like, I'm looking through now and I could be wrong, but I don't see a feat that's like, oh, I can upgrade one of my friend's items for a short time. Like that would be pretty cool if I could be like, oh, Obaziah's Dashko does a laser damage, but that thing is immune to fire. I am going to change her Dashko and I'm going to reverse the polarities and now it's going to do cold damage. Haha, I'm amazing. Now, like, I like stuff like that. Like, this is a game that prides itself on teamwork, but it just doesn't do buffs, and I don't understand why. Like, buffs are great. Do them.
Yeah. I mean, that is a consideration, I think. I don't think you're off base. I mean, it doesn't matter a whole ton to me, but I can see.
I say this as the guy who, like, loves playing support characters. You know that.
And I absolutely hate playing support characters, so.
I want to buff everybody. Buff the planet.
I want you to get strong. Be strong.
I want to make you strong. do we want to talk about customizations? Cause like there's a whole bunch of like little, okay. So I guess we should probably talk about drones and robot companions backing up, right?
Yep.
Okay. So I'm not going to go into a lot of detail because if you are familiar with how animal companions work in second edition, it's basically the same. You have three chassis, chassis, chassodes,
chassis, chassis,
Chassis, thank you. Mm-hmm. We have three chassis. You have, maybe four. You have the agile chassis, the imitator chassis, the powerful chassis, the surveillance chassis, the tank chassis. That's five. I was wrong. I was off by a lot. Mm-hmm. And each one of them has like a type of integrated melee weapon and a support benefit, which is an ability that the robot can use in conjunction with its owner or master or whatever you want to call it, to give them like a benefit. So like the agile chassis support benefit is
that's not even a support benefit. That is just an attack from it.
It's true. And it says you launch the item and you catch it. So it takes an,
I was looking at the surgical strike.
Yeah. That's the advanced maneuver. That's violence. How these guys work is that you basically will take feats will give you improvements, right? And it'll say you gain the agile improve or the nimble improvement or the savage improvement or the this improvement or the that improvement, and they'll tell you when you get things like support benefits or advanced maneuvers. So there are feats throughout the class where if you're playing a drone mechanic, you take the feat to upgrade the drone to get these better abilities. But yes, surgical strike, I think that comes online either 8th or 10th level is where you get that feat, that upgrade ability, and it's just violence. Yeah. It's very good.
It's just undetected, and I'm sure everybody's going to love that.
Yeah, no, it's going to be great. I love it. I think it's very interesting from what I've seen, just kind of glancing it over. The surveillance chassis is the only one that seems to have a ranged weapon. All the other drones have melee weapons, so they are what's the name of that show, you remember, where they would build the robots to destroy each other? Battle bots. Yeah, they're all battle bots.
I mean, the powerful chassis actually has the advanced maneuver hydraulic flipper, which is one of the most common weapons in battle bots.
I know. It's so good. It's so good. Exactly. If you wanted to play like what Scout was to Quig in the original Starfinder First Edition, he's probably surveillance chassis. He's a small, lightweight flyer and has like a spark gun. Pretty cool. What did you think, James?
I mean, I like BattleBots.
I know you like BattleBots. It seems so. One of the things that's funny is that in Starfinder First Edition, being a melee drone was kind of bad. Like there was only one option to do it, and its strength was like 2 points behind a player of that level at every points, and used like a terrible base attack bonus progression. So they were generally like 4 or 5 attack bonus points below a soldier of their level. But like this seems like you could probably actually like take your hydraulic fist and destroy a person with it. That's pretty cool.
I mean, you can definitely be an annoyance and increase your action economy. And Dom Hero Ellis in chat does mention there is a drone upgrade where you can put on a normal gun on your drone.
Yeah, it's called integrated weapon mod. It's very cool.
You can give it a gun.
I feel like one of the most common commercial customizations is probably going to be grounded, because by default drones are weak to electricity.
Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, yeah. And when you take that, you're no longer weak. You make you cover your drone in rubber.
there was one that I found pretty funny, which was aquatic adaptation. It says your robot companion is waterproof and gains a swim speed of 20 feet.
I love that.
Was That's it so not good. Waterproof before?
I don't think so. I guess not. This is a good example where sometimes, so like whoever wrote this class, you should know that sometimes when you are trying to be flavorful, you add problems. Flavor is wonderful, but if you're not careful, flavor can be a problem. Is my drone not waterproof? If I throw it in the water, does it just die? Like, what does that mean? Does this mean?
I assumed it was waterproof.
Yeah, like now I'm gonna go up now and I'm gonna look at the drone and I'm gonna be like that says is your own ever beyond range, you can't perform actions, you can customize by taking feats. No, there's nothing there about what happens if it falls into water, but like now I'm concerned.
Yes, humans are waterproof but can't breathe air. That's the difference.
Right,
I could get the aquatic adaptation as being like depth protection, like you know how most watches are rated to 5 feet of water or something like that. Being rated to your swim speed makes you actually able to perform in the water. But like,
listen though, if you're gonna say that mines don't explode to damage because it's too much of a headache, this is too much of a headache too. Just say your drone is waterproof, or get rid of that word waterproof. or change it to say your robot companion's weapons and gear are watertight or sealed or something. Like, just get rid of that word. Your robot companion gains a swim speed of 20 feet. I don't want that word waterproof. It makes me existentially question the nature of my ability to build this robot.
I just saw that. It was tickled. I would never, unless it was funny, make somebody's robot die. If it went to water.
One of the things that's funny is that you could take the advanced customization Sapient. Your robot companion has achieved Sapience. I really hope that Dustin reviewed this and said, oh, no, we can't use the word sentient here. Alex will slay us on No Direction Beyond if we use sentient instead of sapient. I complain about that to him all the time. When people are like, yes, this sentient species is capable of advanced mathematics, I'm like, my dog is sentient. Sentient just means being able to perceive stimuli. It does not mean being able to know higher level thinking and like having like the wisdom of being like self-conscious and aware. And I'm happy they did it right here. Yeah, it makes me so happy.
Another thing about that one, and this is more of a I think funny thing to me, is that you give it an intelligence bonus of +0, which makes it have a human-like intelligence or due to the stress of combat, you must command your robot to battle an act. So you give it sapience and then it has anxiety.
Or it also says it's no longer immune to mental or spirit damage. Your robot has a soul and now you can hurt it with it. That's great. It's so funny.
It's like, why would you do that? You're evil. Why are you giving this robot anxiety?
So here's the thing though. Like, it says it can attempt actions that require intelligence and charisma, but it doesn't actually gain proficiency in any skills that do it. And its bonus is +0. So like, it's going to be garbage at them. I feel like this is the whether or not it was intentional, this customization is the embodiment of the meme. Look what you did. You took a monkey and gave it anxiety. You took a toaster and gave it anxiety. You took a gun and gave it anxiety.
There's ways to get skills, but you do have to invest into that and make it a diplomacy bot probably to get the most out of that.
Yeah, I think that like you probably, this ability probably needs to give some of those benefits for free. Everything else in that thing, except for like, I'm sorry, giving it the ability to speak common is not a bonus. There are lots of people who should not be allowed to speak common in the real world.
Father, I'm scared. This combat is scary. What do I do?
You could speak combat, but you get a +0 to any roles that would happen because you can speak. Like, this is just a downside. This needs to be reworked. I like the mechanic. I think it's good. It needs the second to last ability on this list. It needs a glow up.
All right. On the real, I think everything that we ran through is funny enough. It's fine the way it is.
Yeah,
I want people with anxiety robots. That's hilarious to me.
Oh, they could keep the anxiety robot, but it needs to give a benefit to justify it.
No, the benefit is that it exists.
I disagree, but we're allowed to have different opinions. I think I want it to be good and you enjoy it because it's so obviously bad.
Yeah, that's half the characters I make, so.
You know what? I have seen you play with two different rage pools across three different classes. It's true.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of things that actually, this is not a good transition because I don't think the Technomancer is bad.
This is a terrible transition. Moving on to the Technomancer.
Yeah, moving on to the Technomancer. So the Technomancer, I think that what it gets baseline is what you would expect. This is the wizard of the future. And it's got a key attribute of intelligence, 6+ your con and hit points. It's trained in fort and reflex, an expert in will, trained in perception, trained in arcana, computers, and additional skills equal to 1+ your intelligence modifier. You probably have a 3 or a 4, so it's probably like 4 or 5 skills. You're also trained in simple weapons and unarmed attacks, light armor, unarmored defense, spell attack modifiers, spell DC, and the Technomancer class DC. Now, so if you remember the Technomancer from first edition, it basically had its magical computer spell cache. It had magic hacks that let it change what it could do, how like different effects worked. And then when you look at the enhanced version of the class, which we covered, I don't know, a year and a half ago, maybe 2 years ago, mm-hmm. That one also had like special abilities where you could focus in specific schools of magic to gain additional benefits in them. This class kind of combines some of those ideas, but I think that of all of the classes that we've seen, this one feels like it's changed the most from, and that includes like all seven of the core classes plus the mechanic. I think this class feels the most different to me. And whereas, you know, when James and I saw the original soldier and we were like, why can't you take a sword and kill people with it? And got really upset about it. Like the changes in the Technomancer, I think are very good. And I think that they give this class something that it needs. And it's an identity that isn't Space Wizard. I should not be able to make the joke that this is Space Wizard about this class. And I think that by the end of this, it's not really a Space Wizard anymore. And it's a good thing. So you have spellcasting, goes up to 10 level spells, just like Witch Warper, just like all second edition classes. You can heighten them, which means you can take a, when you get spell slots at second rank and higher, you can fill those slots with stronger versions of lower level spells. You have the cantrips, so they're at will spells that improve as you level up. You also have something called a spell database, which is a technological object that has a personalized digital database of every spell that you know how to cast. You start with it. You get it for free. You study it each day to prepare your spells. It's basically a spell book. I'm sorry. I know I said this isn't the wizard, but it's the wizard. It could be a comm unit, a data pad, a lens integrated into a prosthetic eye. It could be literally anything you want. If it's ever damaged, destroyed, or stolen, it loses its magic, and you can download your spell database onto another technological device as a 10-minute activity. So what that means is that, like, if my database is on my phone and someone steals my phone, it stops being magical, and then I can go to Space Apple Store, Spapple Store, and buy a new phone and download my spellbook onto the phone, and now it's my spellbook. I think that's dope. I love that. It only takes 10 minutes. I wish that the real world, like, man, I can't set up a computer in 10 minutes. Like, yeah, so yeah. Great.
If anything, I feel like this feels like the Arcanist.
Yeah, I definitely think it's very Arcanist-y, especially since you talk about an ability we'll get to later called Download Spell. I don't love the term spell database because it talks about the database being a technological object, and a database by design is ones and zeros. Like, it's not physical. Like, nobody says, aha, look, they say like server. If you told me this was a spell server, I would like that better, but that's a nitpick. It's not a big deal. I'm going to give my opinions, but I'm going to admit that when my opinions are pedantic and not like the thing that you should judge this class by. Similar to a wizard, you add two spells, arcane spells, to your spell database every time you gain a level, and they can be any common spell of your arcane tradition or any spell that you could learn via learn a spell. So if like your GM gives you uncommon spells, you can learn those too. And you also, every time you gain a new spell level, you have an option called a programming language, which is really dope. And you learn a new spell from your language and get it into your database for free. Now, you might be wondering, oh man, but I really liked magic hacks. And if they're just going to call them technomancer feats, what happened to magic hacks? Surprise, they're now the focus spell for this class, similar to how Witch Warpers, I think it's Paradigm Shift was theirs, right? It was Paradigm Shifts so. For the,
I believe.
Yeah. And that's basically like I talked about it before when we were talking about the mechanic. You have a pool of focus points. You have one point for every focus spell you have. As you learn more Technomancer focus spells, or actually any focus spell, you get more points. And those points regain when you spend 10 minutes to refocus. You gain some of them back. You gain an initial magic hack that's unique to your programming language at first level. And you can learn another magic hack from it at when you take the advanced magic hack feat and another one with greater magic hack. Did you want to say something, James?
No, I was laughing in chat.
Oh, okay. The chat is very funny today. I think they're seeing me go crazy and they're like, oh. So now programming language. Your programming language it's kind of like if you were an operative, it's like what your specialization is as a technomancer. It is the specific type of language that you code your spells in. So like if you're a Java technomancer or you're a Python technomancer, like it's your programming language. Your programming language determines like the bonus feat you gain at first level, which focus spells you learn from first level, and the bonus spells you add to your spell cache for free. It's a pretty big decision. Yeah, your overclock, exactly. And then the other big thing you get is called a spell cache, which that is a term from first edition too. It is a magical shorthand for your favorite spells that makes them easier to cast. You automatically add spells from your cache to your cache from your programming language as soon as you can cast spells of that rank. And spells in the database can be prepared normally during your daily preparations, or you can download these spells to overwrite them. When James was talking about this feels like the first edition Arcanus, I think this is probably what you were talking about.
Yep, being able to just to swap out spells based on your spellbook being different from your spells per day.
Yeah, so basically you have to prepare your spells like a wizard, but you can download a spell cache spell and overwrite it with that spell. So like if I prepare haste and I'm like, oh man, I really want to make that guy slow so he doesn't get an action. Slow is in my cache. I can download slow, override haste, and then make that man very sad.
Yep. It's a good little trick.
Yeah, it's very cool. I'm a big fan of it. This is one of the many abilities that make this class feel like it's not just Space Wizard. It makes it feel something unique. The other thing that you can do is, this is a tech class, so you get an ability called the Overclock Gear Action. It is a concentrate, single action ability, and your most recent action must have been to cast a non-cantrip spell. That means it's a leveled spell. You take residual energy from that spell to unlock the full potential of your equipment. After you cast a spell, one item you are holding, wielding, or wearing, or one tech minion you're commanding, depending on your program language, becomes overclocked for 1 minute. You can only have one overclock gear at a time. I'm not really sure what being overclocked means, but it sounds cool and I like it. Oh, look, it's key term. Overclock gear benefits a special bonus based on your language. Okay. Yep. So your programming language determines what that does.
And it allows you to jailbreak your spells. It's the ramp that you need, the access, so you can't just jailbreak spells out of combat or out of stressful situations.
Okay. Yeah. That's interesting. All right.
Mm-hmm. So there's a bit of a ramp to it, because at third level you get jailbreak spell, which is basically you burn that overclock to alter a spell further. Sometimes you can do them for your magic hack spells. Sometimes spells just have them. There's also other places where it's used, but it's kind of the, you know, in WoW, World of Warcraft, when you get like a proc, it feels like a proc button.
It kind of seems like it's a, if overclock gear is a buff you put on, this seems like you break the buff to get an effect.
Yes.
Or like exactly. You consume the buff.
Exactly.
I'm going to stack this buff and every stack gives me 2% crit. And then when I press this other button, I consume all the stacks and do a big chunk of damage or do something really cool. Yeah,
but normally you can only have one thing at a time overclock. So it is just the gated entry to the rest of the class.
Yes. So you got to overclock. You got to database it.
I mean, it happens for free after you cast a spell, so...
Yeah, I know that that Dustin probably wants us to sing the what's the name of that anime that has the really good database?
Log Horizon. We were singing Log Horizon. Yeah. We missed it.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was reading. I was
nerd.
I'm terrible. One of the things I like is, as spellcasters, like your ability to get a 10th level spell is a feature. Like, so for if you're a technomancer, the feature that gives you your 10th rank spell slot is called administrator privileges. Like, you have administrator privileges to reality. I love it.
Yeah.
It's very cool.
And I mean, your program languages also are fun little nods to programming languages, like DPS, DPS plus instead of C++, ServoShell instead of PowerShell, I think, Viper instead of Python. I'm not a programming person, but
yeah. Now, in terms of the mechanics, I like all of these. Like, if you go DPS++, your entire programming language is about buffing weapons and doing damage, and it's cool. I like that. So if you want to do damage with spells and guns, like, that's a good one to pick.
And a lot of movement.
I think Fort Run is basically about armor and defense. So you get like a lot of protection spells, like literally protection, resist energy. You get haste, unfettered movement, which is freedom of movement in these editions. And you get like abilities to boost your armor class, stuff like that. And the jailbreak allows you to apply the denial of safety shapeshift spell shape to a spell that deals damage, which I think, if I'm remembering right, allows you to like manipulate the area so you don't hurt people, which is pretty cool. And the servo shell is all about summoning creatures. So you make little minions that do cool stuff. That's the one that was talking, the ability was talking about, like a creature you summon, like it's all this one. And Viper is... That one is like the espionage one, right? It's all like true sight and delete and locate and dynamic frequency scaling. Like, if you want to be the sneaky guy, it's that one. One thing I'm not a big fan of, I don't like how Viper and Fort Run are very like Pack Worlds tied. I think that what if I want to play someone who's from the Vescarium? Or does that mean that like my programming language is only associated with Abadar Corp? That might make sense for the Vescarium, considering how tied it and the Pack Worlds have been. But like, what if I'm making a Technomancer who is an a Jin Soul? Like, I don't have an equivalent for this ability. I
mean, you might. It just says they began as for both of them. It doesn't say that they are only used by.
Yeah, I'd rather just not see that there and then just talk about like a base about like what it is and what it does and what it's used for.
Give me the lore. I can be an Abadar Corp shill.
See, I would rather it not have the lore in the ability and having a sidebar that gave me context in the setting, or like having a setting book that gave me context. I like when the lore, like, it would be like if a cleric domain, like this is the darkness domain, this was originally harnessed by the clerics of Zan Kuthan and Nadal during the Age of Darkness. That's very cool. That's very lore appropriate. But like, now all of a sudden that domain doesn't work for anybody that's not Zan Kuthan. Like, I would prefer to see some of the flavor pulled out and put other places. I'm not always very consistent, because like I like the gap being one in Witchwarper. I think that one's really cool, but to me the gap is something that is experienced across the entire galaxy, so like everybody was touched by the gap, so it makes sense that the gap is an option for everybody. I don't think that tech really fits that same criterion, but again, that's just my preference. I would rather see some of that like scrubbed a bit.
Yeah,
but let's talk about feats.
I want to say pirate spell because I'm struggling to think of how you use that.
Oh, talk about it.
You counterspell, and then you put it in your spell cache.
That's so funny.
What do you do to counterspell?
There's an action. It's a counterspell reaction.
And what do you do with that reaction? Is it like Pathfinder 1E where you use the spell that's being used?
It says, yeah, a creature casts a spell that you have prepared. So you have to have that as a prepared spell in order to counterspell.
So you took a feature to take a spell to put in your spell cache that you had already.
Huh.
you have that spell. You prepared it, right? Okay, there's a feat that lets you use different spells to counter. Okay. So, I figured that would come up eventually, but as what I see here from the base options, from the limited amounts that I know, I looked at this, I'm like, this is cool. There's probably a something that changes this, but for what is just kind of listed
that,
here.
Like, that kind of seems like too many feats, though. Like, I need to do 3 feats in order to steal somebody's spell and put it in my cache.
I mean, it's really cool if you get that against somebody that has uncommon spells. Like, I see the vision on it. But I was just like thinking about like seeing the first level reading counterspell, because once again, I'm not familiar with 2E terms, saying that you have to have this, and then going, until I put more stuff into this, this feat actually doesn't give me anything.
Yeah.
So you have to, that's part of a build and not an individual option.
Yeah. I like, so one of the things I like is that there's a good number of spell shape feats in the Technomancer feat section. Spell shape, for those of you who are listening, if you're familiar with first edition Pathfinder, because you play first edition Starfinder and came from that, a spell shape is basically kind of like what metamagic was in first edition Pathfinder. And all of the spell shape classes that are part of the Technomancer class have a jailbreak effect. So you can use that jailbreak spell class feature to jailbreak any Technomancer feat that has a space, the spell shape tree. I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan of, I'm gonna hack this gear and I'm gonna get a cool thing. I think my favorite feat that I have seen, I think that it would probably be Alaka Blam. I like the name Alaka Blam.
that is a good name.
Yeah. It says you're holding a weapon and your last action was to cast a spell from a spell gem or a spell chip. And you use the remains of that gem or spell ship to fire that trash at someone and hurt them with it. You can either reload a ranged gun using it, and if the spell wasn't damaging, it does an extra 1d6 force damage. I think that's pretty cool. It's definitely a feat we've seen before. Like, it feels a lot like the first level feats in first edition Pathfinder that are like, if your last action was to cast a spell, you can use this to get a +1d6 bonus on your next strike. Like, it feels like that, but I also think this one is very funny, and I'm okay with that. I think sometimes the meme is better.
Yeah, there's a couple feats that allow you to do things like re-overclock or overclock multiple things at a time, which I think are good. Keep mm-hmm. that uptime on there. Was it debug spell? No, reflect spell, I think is hilarious. Once again, probably part of a build and not an individual thing you take.
Yes. yeah, there's a lot of good ones here. And so I think out of 20 of the abilities called God Mode.
I mean, grenade spell is back, and that's amazing.
It is very good. I feel like they're always afraid to do grenade spell, and then it comes back and we're like, yes. Speed run is one. You gain the speed run magic hat, which sounds pretty funny. If I look at that quick, it says you become a flickering echo clipping through the normal parameters of reality. You gain resistance 10 to all damage except force damage. You gain the cosmic and incorporeal traits, allowing you to phase through walls and move through the air as easily as you would normally walk. You can move through enemy squares unless that enemy is incorporeal, though your movement still triggers reactions. If your gear is overclocked, you can extend its duration an additional round by making your gear no longer overclocked. Pretty cool.
Yeah.
I like it.
I mean, and the magic hacks for the DPS are great. I love the, there we go. I'm drinking sure, because there's two that are, okay. It is the one that allows you to cast a spell with an enraged mm-hmm. area, and you teleport yourself and your gear to one open space affected by the area spell.
Uh-huh.
You choose to arrive before or after the spell effect takes place.
Huh.
That is a great little rider that can allow you to do some really stupid things.
I like dumb things, so that's good.
Like,
dumb things are what's fun in these role-playing games.
Like, I just want to do that to make it look like somebody else fireballed me.
I'm right. Like, ah!
You show up, you're like, oh God, why would you do this? Kyle!
Kyle, how could you? That's very funny. All right. So we went over the classes. Thoughts. What do you think of the tech classes, James?
I like where they're going. I, especially with the Technomancer, need more 2E Pathfinder, 2E spellcasting, just base knowledge to really understand what's happening. Mm-hmm. Because that's not something I ever really got deep into. Because as opposed to you, I hate being a support class. And when we played 2E, I was a support class, and I could have been a drink dispenser or one of them birds that drinks out of the cup. One of the drinky birds. So
I love playing a support class because I hate losing, and I lose if everybody else is dead.
Just hit harder.
No. I like taking your blood and putting it back in your body. It's very good. It's very good.
Just hit harder. Be more resilient. I'm good. But I think that the mechanic has kept a lot of its original flavor and expanded it in a way that I think is positive. So I'm pretty excited for that one. I think that one's going to be very popular continually.
Yeah, I think that the mechanic is just a huge glow up over one first edition. I think there's a lot of places where ability terms don't make sense and the flavor is incorporated in ways that are not clear. But I think that it's good. It's very strong, and I am very excited to see where it goes. I feel the similarity about the Technomancer. I think it feels like a spellcaster class in the second edition system, and I think it's going to have similar problems, especially if you are somebody who wants to cast the big spell at the very strong dude, and he's just not going to be affected. So keep that in mind. This class is still a spellcaster in this system, but I think that it's got a lot of really fun flavor, and one of the things I really like about it is it's very gear focused, and it seems like the Technomancer has a lot of options that encourage you to use your weapons. So like, I'm a wizard, but I'm a wizard with a gun, and I'm very good with my gun. I'm going to shoot you with it. And I think that that is going to be the thing that makes this class feel different. If you pull a wizard into Starfinder and you have put them next to a Technomancer, the Technomancer is going to be using 10th level magic to let them do ridiculous stuff while they fight. And the wizard is going to be throwing fireballs. And I think it's cool that they're going to look different.
Yeah. I think that increased just versatility that the Technomancer has is really what sets it apart from a wizard in space.
Yeah. I like how in chat they're saying, I adore the Technomancer, but it has one glaring flaw, no junk sword. as the person who wrote junk sword in first edition, I agree. Someone needs to go ahead and write junk sword like immediately. Preferably like 6 months ago, but you know, it is what it is. I guess they can't put everything in this book.
Gotta leave some anticipation.
Yeah. So one of the other things that I wanted to touch base on, it's At the time of recording, we are at the hour point, so normally we would be done. But I don't know how much you know about how amazing Starfinder Society is shaping up to be, James.
I did play the first two playtest scenarios, and they were pretty good.
I'm not talking about the scenarios. I'm talking about the new rules. Oh my gosh, I'm very excited for so. I don't want to get into a whole lot of it, but I stopped playing organized play when the previous leadership decided that they were going to set it up so that you needed to play like you needed 80 achievement points, getting about 4 points a game in order to play a ancestry that was not like a core rulebook ancestry. I did not like that. There was like communication that was going to be looked at and changed. And the change was to give everybody one free option and make no other changes. So you'd have to still earn 80 points, making 4 points a game in order to get one. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, nah, I don't have time for this. I'm done. And I was like, I'll come back when things are affordable and look good. So I'm going to summarize some of the stuff that's been in the Starfinder Society blog updates, because they have done a blog post every week in the month of May, which has been amazing communication. I'm really happy with Jessica Cataland and Alex Spadell and how clear they've been about what their expectations are. One of the things they said that was not very popular with a lot of the fans was that currently there are no plans to do society scenarios higher than 10th level.
Boo! Boo!
Yeah. A lot of people are in that boat. I'm okay with that being a rule for the first year, because I think that, like, you know, you got to get people playing the stuff you're doing. You want to get new people in. But I think that having a hard and fast rule like that probably is not a good idea. You should, like, people want to play high level characters and they want to have progression. And I know some of the best things I've ever done in society play was I played my Blood Rager at level 16 fighting the Grim Reaper in first edition Pathfinder. That was amazing. So yeah. I would like to see it go higher. I don't think you should commit to something that you would want to change later, lest you become Wizards of the Coast and have a reserved list. Not a good idea. But I think that one of the things I am excited for is that there's a commitment to, first of all, they've said that when you make a new character for society play in Starfinder, you can make that character at first, third, fifth, or seventh level. You don't need any boons, any prior XP. You just pick the level you want to start at of those ones.
Yeah, that one I enjoy. I think is totally fine. A lot of people don't enjoy the early grind or they want to experience something different. Totally fine.
Yeah. Number two. That I'm very excited about. They have committed that the majority of printed classes and ancestries in Starfinder are going to be always available to play without an achievement point cost. So if it's for Starfinder, you can play it. You don't need to jump through hoops. You don't need special boons. Most of the stuff is going to just be available for play unless it is like something that needs to be special or unique. Like, I could see them, if this was Pathfinder 2nd edition, I could see like the Exemplar needing something. And I think the Exemplar is always available.
Or so Starfinder 1E, like Jin Souls or something.
Yeah. But like, if you're going to make it so that you can always play an Exemplar, like a literal demigod in your organized play, I feel like all bets are kind of off. So I'm happy to see that. The other thing that they have committed to is that, as the system goes on, they are going to let you spend achievement points to use options from Pathfinder 2nd edition and Starfinder if you want to. So they've said that there will be options to spend achievement points to play ancestries. So if you're me, you can play a Kitsune, or you can play like a Kolo, or you could play a wizard, or you could play a swashbuckler, or for some reason, if you want to play a gunslinger in Starfinder, you can do it. The other thing they've said is that you will be able to, it's going to be relatively affordable. It's 8 achievement points. And at the rates that they've given for how often achievement points are earned, players earn 4 achievement points for every 4-hour scenario, and GMs earn 8 achievement points for every 4-hour scenario. So if you GM one game, you can pick a Pathfinder option you want and play it, which I think is pretty cool.
Yeah, I think that's more than fair.
Yeah, I that is reasonable to me. Like, tell me that I need to play one game to play my character, or like, if for some reason I want multiple things from first edition too, that's fine. And I think that like it leaves them open that like if they decide they want to make if they want to make kobolds for second edition Starfinder because their kobolds have that weird lore where they are like phased out from time or whatever, then they can do that and then just kind of port them into the new system and it's fine. Yep. Very excited. very happy with it. I think that overall, looking pretty good. I'm actually really excited. I've already contacted our venture captain, Matt Morris, and I'm going to try to start playing and running Starfinder 2nd Edition when it comes out, because I made a promise that if they fixed the thing I didn't like, I would come back and play, and I am nothing if not a man of my word.
Yeah, good on you. I mean, but I know we are opposite in this, where you want everything accessible all the time, pretty much, and I enjoy restrictions.
No, do not restrict me, James. I am too powerful for that.
No, I like restrictions, because then it makes weird things specialer, but that's just a different perspective.
Yeah, but at least under this system, like, I'm paying something to get the restriction removed, you know? Like, it's still a cost to me, and it's easier to just not, like... The path of least resistance is just to be the quig that's in my heart.
Yeah, yeah.
And I will admit, I really did like Yenzi, my first edition Yasoki Daredevil operative. They were very fun. Yeah. I just ran. Do you remember that one fight we did where I ran like 100 feet in a turn with my sniper rifle? So I ran 100 feet and then sniper rifle shot the guy, and he spent both of his turn trying to get from to me, and then I just ran away again.
Yeah, yeah, he just scurried away like a little rat.
It was so good. I love that character. So funny.
Yeah, it was good.
I also like Dax and Ray, my Skittermander Solarian. So, like, maybe I don't need a Kitsune immediately, but they're coming. Mm. Oh, absolutely. They'll be here. It's like watching the rock coming towards Earth, the asteroid. But it's got like 9 foxtail trails on it.
Oh, those are useless. Don't get rid of those.
No. In 2nd edition Pathfinder, you just, like, anytime you get either a new spell level or a feat, you just get a tail for free. You don't have to, like, take a useless feat for it. You don't have to
take 9 feats.
Nah. Listen, James is laughing because we played an adventure with our friend who's currently running another one of the games with us, where I was a Blood Rager that took all 9 magical tail feats. They hardly ever came up. They were almost never useful. By the time I had them, that spell was no longer relevant to the high level play we were doing. And there was one point in an adventure where a witch hit me with forced reincarnation. I died, reincarnated as a halfling, turning off all of my magical tail feats. But my stats went up because halflings are smaller, so they had a better attack bonus. They have a better armor class. Halflings have the same ability score modifiers as Kitsune, so my ability score modifiers didn't change. And I got a +1 to all my saving throws, and I got a +2 to several different skills. So literally dying and becoming a halfling made my character better in every possible way.
And he hated it.
I was mad. My character was mad. I like rage quit from that session, and I wasn't even mad at our GM. I was mad at what fate had done to me.
He hated the truth.
It was bad. All right. But thanks for joining us here at No Direction Beyond. As always, if you enjoy us, we invite you to come hang out with us even more. James and I are always around in our Discord, which you can see by going to nodirectionpodcast.com, clicking on that little Discord link and hopping on in and chatting. We are happy to talk with anybody. We're always popping in, saying things, giving people the down low. And hey, worst to worst, even if you don't want to talk, you'll get notifications of when we're going live. It is always the last Wednesday of every month. So our next section will be on May 28th, which is very exciting. On May 28th, James and I will be talking about Galaxy Guide. That book is already shipping to subscribers. I think I just got my copy on Tuesday. So very excited to talk about it. And that also, I believe, will happen. I think that's the week after Memorial Day weekend, so it'll be after PaizoCon. I'm sure we'll have fun Starfinder things to talk about on that after that have been announced at PaizoCon. So stay tuned. The drought is over. Now we will bask in the radiant glow of all things Starfinder.
And more content. You know,
at least until June, when I have no idea what we're going to do until the core rulebook comes out. But we'll figure it out. And if you want to watch me and James figure it out, you can go beyond No Direction. I messed up the salute really bad there, guys. I'm so sorry.